As we celebrate the completion of our all-new version of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, we wanted to share the ways in which the central themes of that story affect our lives today. And this is the first of two special bonus episodes from Hope Media Group and Compassion International. Hey, I'm Wally from The Wally Show on WayFM, and A Christmas Carol, like many of the Dickens' novels, is a story fraught with poverty, destitution, pain, and redemption. But another characteristic of a Dickens story is that the author most often explored these dark times through the lens of children who navigated their way through these worlds. And it was children who managed to find hope, love, and faith in otherwise desperate situations. And I have no doubt that if he had been writing today, 150 years later, Charles Dickens might tell the story of Jay Biro. Now, Jay grew up in the slums of Mathari in Kenya, struggling to survive, being thrown in jail at 9 years old. But Jay wouldn't end up having the happiest ending of any character in a Dickens novel. And thanks to our friends at Compassion International, he's here today with us to share his story. Where did your story start? Like, let's go all the way back to that.
Thank you so much. My story began back in Mathare, in Nairobi, Kenya. And that's where I was born. And it's one of the biggest slums, one of those places where we talk of hopelessness, but that's one of the places there's a lot of hopelessness. Just beginning by looking at it, the expectations and everything about it. In my community, one of the hopeless things that happened is that the kids born in my community, automatically as a boy, you'd be expected to be a thief and a girl to be a prostitute. And when you talk about the ghost, can you imagine sleeping in a house that when it rains, you actually have to move your beddings because most likely the spot that you're sleeping is going to, the water is going to come through.
Yeah, what was your house made of?
Our house was made out of dirt. Literally, you'd pick a spot, you dig in, and then while you're digging, the reason you're digging is that the soil that you're digging is part of what you're going to use to build the wall with. And so they would dig the wall and use the mud, and then the roof would be made out of tin roofs. And one thing about the mud is that, of course, when it rains, you know, one of those rains that comes on the side, it would fall on the house and the whole house would come down. And so, yeah, so when we talk about the horrors of growing up, there's a lot. And as far as the expectation, nothing good was expected to come out of my community.
How many people live in Mathari?
I would say about 1 million in that particular area. And that's being generous because some people, they're in and out, but it's a very congested area with houses that are back to back. And in these houses, we're talking between 5 to 10 or even 15 people in one room. And usually I say it's a confused room. It was not a self-contained. It was self-confused because it's a room where everywhere you have, it's a bed. Like literally you move some things on the side when it comes to at night because you need some space to sleep. And so, yeah, it's a very squeezed house, squeezed community.
So now you are walking the streets of Mathari, and I've noticed, like, as I walk through Mathari slum myself, like, right. I was blessed enough to go see. So I kind of know parts of what you're talking about.
Right.
And there were things that were crunching beneath my feet,
right.
You know, and
right.
That's like, there is trash everywhere,
right.
You know, and other things too that can basically, there's drug problems and things like that, correct?
Right, right. Yeah, and basically you, like I said, you're growing up without having the basic needs. And so even when you're walking those streets, you're walking barefoot. You don't have any, if you have any pair of shoes or any clothes, those are special ones for only special occasions like Christmas or something like that. But basically that's where you're playing. If people are doing drugs, they don't have a place to go and trash. They trash it anywhere. So you can be walking barefoot and then you step on something, you don't know what that is. Now, when I think about it now, there was a lot of dangerous things that was happening. Now, in Mathare, there's a very big mental hospital. It's called Mathare Mental Hospital. That mental hospital, for some reason, whenever they would treat their patient, they would dump all their waste. And this, I'm talking about needles and all the everything that they're using in the hospital. They would dump them near where we lived. And these are things that would be spread out all over. And so you could be walking and step on a needle that was used. You don't know with what disease. And as kids, for playing, we would pick some of those needles. and they would make arrows and bows.
Oh my gosh.
And because Mathare is divided into small groups, so to speak. So we had some rivalry, especially as kids. We had these stupid games of fighting each other. And that's what we'd use to fight somebody. So can you imagine just hitting somebody with an arrow that has a needle that was used by somebody who's sick?
Yeah, like my wife freaks out if I drop something on the floor and pick it up and eat it. She's like, what are you doing? Like, I can't even imagine that.
We hope you're enjoying Scrooge, A Christmas Carol. You can read more about forgiveness, faith, and hope in our 5-day reading plan based on the Charles Dickens classic. Click the link in the show notes or visit ScroogePodcast.com.
Let's flash forward a little bit. We're still in the past. You went to prison.
Right.
At what age?
9.
9 years old. Right. And for what?
Before we get there, it's what got me there is just being in a family that didn't have basic needs like food.
Right.
Waking up in the morning, you don't have anything to eat. We would try to go to school. I usually say try to go to school because you're going to school hoping that, hey, today they're gonna allow you to stay in class, because chances are, because you didn't pay the tuition fee, which most of the people must pay tuition fee, you must have school uniform. And if you're struggling between food and that, there's no way that you can not eat so that you can go to school.
Right.
And so because of those struggles, you find families are struggling. And my family was no different. And coming home in a cold room, which was an indication that nothing had been cooked. And then my mom and my grandmother would have to look at our faces and say, hey, we don't have anything to eat. And that means we'd go to bed hungry. So when those happen over and over, like you're coming home, there's nothing to eat, You're like, okay, what's going to happen next? What do I do? So usually, like I said, most of the kids in my community are expected to be thieves. It's because of such, you lack the alternative of what you're going to eat, what you're going to sleep, where you're going to sleep. And so you are led to do some things. And for me, I didn't want to become a thief. And the reason, because there's how we deal with thieves in Kenya. And it's called the mob justice.
Mm.
They get a hold of you. They can stone you. They can beat you with any sharp object. And the moment you're down and you're weak, they usually take a tire and put it around you and burn you to death.
Oh my God.
So those are the dangers of stealing, no matter how old. So when I was pushed to the wall where we didn't have anything to eat, I didn't want to steal. So I went to the streets of Nairobi and I became a beggar. They're called street boys. You must have seen them when you were you're
definitely
there.
Yeah.
So the street boys are there begging. Basically, I'm like, man, do you have, usually ask for a shilling, which is, I don't even know how to quantify that with a dollar. It's like nothing. But then if you give me some money, I would bring it home and I would feed my family. Not everybody used to do that. Some of the kids would go and use it for drugs and all that. But somehow I felt like I needed to take care of my family at the age of 8. So I did that for some time, but then that wasn't going well. And so I started stealing. And that's when, at the age of 9, when I was stealing, one time I was arrested and I went to prison at the age of 9.
Okay, now explain prison, because we have a view of prison in America as to what it is. And sometimes too, you think, okay, it's a 9-year-old kid, so he went to juvie, where it's not really prison here, it's more like reform. And so what was the prison like for you?
Well, it was very dark. Dark in all ways, like physically dark and just everything that happened. But one thing is that the government then didn't know what to do with people who are begging and people who are stealing, no matter how old you are. So you'll all be stuck in one spot. And the first moment I entered was really dark, in terms of, like, there was a lot of fighting. There was a lot of people doing all sorts of things. And even where they say that we're going to sleep, it was like, that's where the toilet is. And it's not like, I'm not talking about like a nice toilet like you'd have one in a prison in America. No.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bucket and nobody's going to pick it up until the following day. And so for me, it was one of these spaces that I didn't even know where I was. Like it looked like I came to hell, and there's no food at all. Like they would give us something that they said it was food, but it was not food at all. And you're here thinking, why did I end up here? How did I get to this particular place? And It was horrible. And so, yeah, that was probably my darkest moment in life.
And you're nine. I mean, that's terrifying. You're still a child.
Yes, yes.
You know? And so, like, to me, the punishment doesn't fit the crime at all. And you could have become bitter from this for sure. Like, in the Scrooge story, like, Frederick forgave Scrooge and loved him, you know, regardless of how bad he was, you know? And that forgiveness is life-altering. Did you struggle with forgiving people that kind of put you in this place as a nine-year-old?
To be honest with you, I don't even think that I was even mad at them.
Really?
Because I felt like I deserved it. One thing about when you go to the streets, especially when you're stealing, it's like anything that comes to you, it's like you're expecting it. There's this saying, I don't know if it's all over the world, but I know in Kenya we used to hear it a lot, like a thief has 40 days. And so when you're stealing, when you're doing anything, you know what? There's going to be a time where they're going to catch up with you.
Oh, gotcha.
And so you're kind of expecting it to come. So when, well, mine didn't even last. There was not even 40 days for me. But so it's because I was expecting it. I don't think I had any bitterness or I was mad at anybody. So there's nobody to forgive. So all I wanted for me was to be free. And all I wanted for me is to have a different life. I had so many questions. And those questions I had was to God, like, why was I in this position? Why was my family in this position to begin with? What could I have done, which is totally nothing? I didn't decide to come into this world. Right. So I had more questions more than being bitter.
Now, like, your story, like Scrooge, is a story of redemption because you're sitting in prison at nine.
Right.
You know, you're headed down the wrong path. But then something intervened and changed your life. For him, it's the spirits that come and take him and they show him all of the things that were and are and could have been. You know, what was that for you? What was that turning point for you that was your intervention?
I would say for me, it's God through prayers. And how that happened for me, I wanted to get out of prison and I wanted to be free. Those two things is what I wanted to be. The most important thing was to get out of prison, but to get out, and also to get out of poverty. So at some point when I was in prison, I thought to myself, what is it that I can do to get out? So there are options. In Kenya, there are these options of, you know, you bribe. It was a big deal. It's still a big deal. You know, like you give money and then you can get away with something. But again, I was in prison in the first place because we were poor. So where do I even get money to bribe because I'm actually there because we don't have money in the first place? And so for me, I turned to God. And I usually say, when you walk to the streets of Nairobi, you walk to each and every corner, you go to any public transportation, there are preachers on the streets of Nairobi, all over Nairobi, preaching and shouting at the top of their voice and telling you that Jesus loves you. And to be honest with you, we ignore them.
Yeah.
Sometimes we actually say they're annoying. But one thing about the word of God is that whether you like it or not, you heard something. It's sharper than any two-edged sword. And so even when I didn't pay attention, there's something that I heard. And for me, it came through for me when I was in prison. Because when I wanted to get out, that's what I had to lean on. I knelt down in prison and I asked God for two things, to get me out of prison and also to get me out of poverty.
Oh, wow.
And so when I prayed, somehow they started asking me a lot of questions and I went to court because the person that I was, they usually brought somebody to come and ask the kids some questions to figure out who are they, what are they, how, they tried to help. And one thing, I told them I needed to go back to school. So I saw them writing on the paper, I think it was a social worker who wrote and said, back to school. I could read at least I knew some key words. And so when we went to the court, the judge released me on condition that I will never come back to the streets. Because if I come to the streets and then they arrest me and I come to his courtroom, he's never going to let me go. Oh, so that's something that he actually said. So they let me go. So the first part was done. And I was grateful and I was happy and I thank God for that. But then it was like, okay, what's up with the second part? How is God going to answer that?
Yeah.
And of course, I was excited that I'm free, but I was also scared not to go back because I actually went through the same street that I was arrested. And so for me, that's how compassion came through. Because when I was looking for that second answered prayer, how is that going to come through? I didn't know how it was going to happen. Of course, when we are praying about something, you're thinking, I ask for a cup of water, you get a cup of water. But God does not necessarily give you a cup of water straight up. he has a way of giving you something, and then towards the end, you're like, guess what? I actually got water.
Yeah, exactly.
What I needed was water.
How did we get here?
So I got water. And for me, that's how compassion came through for me, because when they came, I didn't think, oh, here is my ticket to get out of poverty. I was like, okay, here's another thing. And I was like, but we were happy about it, because compassion works in between, like in the middle of slums. Like literally, if you see, like I was talking, Matari has like a million plus people. Like you can literally spot out the few churches that are there. And compassion having a center in one of those churches, it's like this, they're empowering this church to be a light in that whole community. And so it was one of those things that we all wanted to be part of it. And so we knew there's this church that has a lot of people come. How do I get help out of that? And so once I was enrolled into the program, because it wasn't easy, I actually have to go through, there's a lot of scrutiny before they can actually select you. Can you imagine, you're poor, but you need to be poor enough to be. But that's what they do, because they are like, there's a lot of people who are poor, but how do we get to the poor of the poorest? And so there's how they ask you a lot of questions. Do you have both parents? Are they working? Stuff like that. Just to make sure that this particular person that we're picking, they're actually at the end of their road. And that was me. And so for me, being selected was, it was a blessing. And yeah, so that's how God answered my second prayer to get out of poverty.
That's crazy. And so like you are a kid, you go through the Compassion Project,
right?
And then you finish your schooling,
right?
And so let's skip forward to the ghost of Christmas, you know, present, but still in the past. But right. Well, no, you know, what did you do? So what was it from being a kid in the Compassion Program and growing up and finishing? Like, did you go to secondary school?
Yes, I went to high school. So actually when you finish primary school, you go to high school. And so, yeah, of course, when you graduate from high school, then you can go to university. Again, it's not easy to go to university because there are very few, at that time especially, there are very few. So they'd pick the best of the best. So I usually say I was just before the best of the best. So I didn't go to college, but at least I went to high school.
And so you had a sponsor that kind of wrote you letters through this time. And
right.
Did those words matter to you? You know, did it help you?
Yes, they did. I usually say there are three things that I got from the program. One of them is that education, that compassion, make sure that we went to school. But the second thing is love. And the love that I got is, of course, from the teachers that were with us, but also from my sponsor, who would write to me. And the first time I heard the words, I love you, was from them.
Oh, wow.
So they tell me how much they love me, how much special I am. And I'm surrounded by hopelessness. But then with all this hopelessness, here's somebody coming and saying that they love you. And I know Americans, we throw that word here and there. For me, it meant a lot. It meant like actually somebody, and not just saying it, but they actually showed it, because they were my sponsors and they would write back and forth. They never got to visit me. I've never seen them.
Oh, wow.
But they already did what they needed to do. And for me, I'm forever grateful for them.
And like, even though you've never gotten to meet them, it doesn't change what they did for you. And I wish that every sponsor could know the tangible difference that they make in the lives of these kids. And
right.
You're a shining example of what that investment looks like.
Scrooge, A Christmas Carol will continue in a moment.
I need not be haunted by the past.
Like Scrooge, you may have some troubling memories of your past. However, you can be free from those and find joy in Christmas again.
Be gone, spirit!
Not on your wishes will I go, Ebenezer.
Just visit ScroogeChristmas.com if you would like to ask for prayer, connect with a local church for this Christmas season, or even download a shareable companion guide to this podcast that will help you find hope and encouragement. Once again, that's ScroogeChristmas.com.
So let's flash forward to the ghost of Christmas present then with you, Jay. So what does your life look like now? Like, what are you doing now?
Of course, I travel with compassion to tell my story, but also because of, you know, the Bible says, to whom much is given, much is expected. For me, I've been involved in music ministry for some time. And so I use music to reach out to the Africans who are all over the US and around the world. But also for me, it's also challenge them to give back to Africa. Mm. So I do compassion, and I also do my own stuff to reach out to Africans. So I do radio, I do events, and also to help kids in my community through a mentorship program.
Now, you have two kids yourself,
right,
correct?
Right.
How have you, how is their life? Like, do you ever share with them what your life was? Because I would imagine, knowing you now and seeing the joy in your face, right, they would never know what you went through as a kid. Like, do you share that with them?
I think they're too little to even understand, even start having that conversation, because I don't know if they would get it enough, because one is 4 and the other one is 6.
Yeah,
so
that's
young. So at this point, they may not get it. I'm actually waiting for them to be like, maybe the next maybe 2 years or so, then I can not tell them, but go show them.
Oh, wow.
I want to take them to my community. I want to show them where daddy grew, and for them to see, then we can start having those conversations.
And I just can't even picture what they would think when they see Mathari for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, just based on what your house probably looks like now,
yeah,
you know. And
if it's still there.
Yeah, yeah.
But one thing that I want... Of course, I don't want my kids to go through what I went through for them to understand. That would be mean. But I also want them to be thankful. If there's a message that I usually tell the kids, is that, or even parents, if you're able to let your children know that, hey, you're having a pizza, you're having 2 or 3 or even 5 pair of shoes, it's not normal to every kid. So don't just take for granted what you have. For me, it's just the kids realizing and knowing that, you know what, we're actually blessed.
I think that's the coolest thing about so many of the former Compassion Kids that I've met as adults, is
right,
they don't take for granted,
yeah,
what was done for them. They,
yeah,
understand the depth of it,
yeah,
and the alteration of their life from it. And,
yeah,
and the best part of that is you guys are always tossing that back to God too,
right,
you know.
And there's no way you can forget what you've gone through. I mean, I don't know what kind of a person I would be if I went through the life that I went through, if I went without having anything, and then now I start taking for granted and forgetting like where I come from. And if that's one of my struggles, like when some opportunities come, one of the things that growing up is that we actually thought, you know what, we don't deserve the best things. So like when you go to some place where there is an opportunity, you're thinking, oh, those kids from a well-off family, they actually should have that and not us. And so having gone all through all that, there's no way I can forget that and start acting as like anything that I want, I can get, and I take it for granted.
So let's jump forward to a little bit of the Ghost of Christmas Future.
Right.
What do you see your life looking like 5 years from now? What are your plans or your hopes and your dreams? Because you had them as a child.
Right.
You know, you prayed to God for what you needed. So where are you at now?
I think for me, where how God has taken me through life, like I said, too much is given, much is expected. For me, I would like to see myself giving more or being involved more in ending poverty in my community, because I strongly believe that if poverty has to end, the people who have gone through poverty have to be on the forefront, or the locals have to be on the forefront. So for me, anything that I'm doing now or anything that I'm planning to do is, how do I go back to my community? And how do I help those kids to see life through my eyes? And I can tell them, hey, you know what? It can be well. I was here and I've seen what God can do. And so don't give up. One of the saddest moments is actually Christmas moment.
Oh, really?
For some of us. Because people, that's when you have the best meal. You're supposed to have the best meal. But then can you imagine waking up on Christmas Day, you don't have anything to eat? So usually you'd buy like the nicest clothes. That's it. So you have one of these like pants and shirts and shoes that you buy only to wear on Christmas Day, not any other day. You can wear after that, but you have to at least wear on Christmas Day. So if you wake up in the morning and you don't have anything to wear, new, like a new shirt and new pants, and then the worst thing is that you don't have anything to eat. There has been those Christmas. And there's something in Kenya we cook, it's called chapati.
Oh, yes.
It's more like a tortilla. You've had it,
yeah,
right?
I've had chapati, yes.
So chapati, when you cook, everybody in the neighborhood knows that you're cooking chapati. Now, can you imagine, you guys are here, you don't have new clothes, you don't have chapati. So other people are eating, but you guys don't have that. So that's...
it takes you back.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't expect that. But
that's how it sneaks up on you, man. And I get it. But, like, yeah, again, you're so thankful from where you were to where you are. And I'm thankful that you can tell your story. I'm thankful that your kids will never have to grow up on Christmas without anything new or wondering where their next meal is coming from, you know?
Yep, yep.
And that's the power of compassion. It doesn't just change one. It does. But it also has a lifetime ripple effect for so, so many people associated with that and with you. So, and I really appreciate you taking time and sitting down and sharing your story with us. Like, if you had any advice for somebody that is kind of listening to this now and they've heard the story of Scrooge, A Christmas Carol, and they've heard your story, what advice would you give to somebody about just living a full life in their faith?
Well, I think because you're talking about Christmas, I would like to highlight that I've realized in America, when it comes to Christmas time, we love to give gifts. That was one of the biggest surprises. Like, I came and I visited with a family, which surprisingly was a Kenyan family that lived an American life. And so they bought us like new PJs. You know, you have to wake up in the morning and, you know, have open gifts and all that. And that's something that we never used to have. And so I know Americans love to give gifts a lot, but where I grew up, gifts was not an option. And there's nothing wrong with giving gifts. Just give as much gifts as you can. But in the process of giving gifts, if you have an opportunity to give a child a gift of a lifetime, a gift that can change their lives totally and forever, because I received that gift, and it's because of that gift that I can even sit now and be thankful. So as we share with our families, let's remember the families that don't have anything, even anything to eat, and
absolutely,
let's share with them. Yeah.
Yeah, because one of the best ways to get unstuck in your faith is to serve somebody else or be generous.
Right.
And it's amazing what that does in your heart. Kind of like Scrooge found out. He's like, oh, there's like in the last episode, he's like excited about going above and beyond in giving because he had been so frugal his whole life.
Right.
And then for him, when that light bulb clicked on about forgiveness and opportunity and redemption and hope, he just gushed it. And so that's one of the things. It doesn't always have to be giant gifts,
right,
but you can give of yourself and give your joy to people that you have. So over 355 million children are trapped in poverty, and Compassion International is working to change those lives one at a time. Jay is an exact great shining example of that, but they do need your support. So please help us make this happen and help make an eternal difference by providing hope for these children who need it this holiday season. If you go to ScroogePodcast.com, you can learn more now. Well, Jay, thanks for being on with us, man.
Thank you so much.
Always a joy to sit with you, and I appreciate you very much.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here and to do it again with you.